It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports. And I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romillo, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and allyoucanheat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports. And you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRomillo13.
We're here recording our official post trade deadline reaction pod. We're recording this on a Friday. The trade deadline ended on Thursday. And on Thursday, David and I got on here and had our immediate reaction about the Dwayne Wade trade, right? So David and I basically just talked about how good it is to have Dwayne Wade back in South Beach, back with the Miami Heat. You can go back and listen to that podcast. It's about, I don't know, 15 minutes long of just sort of us breezing through the kind of top line themes of Dwayne Wade coming back and what it sort of means for the team and what he can and what he could provide for the team. And so now today we are going to dive deeper into the Dwayne Wade news. And then after that, we're going to kind of go around the rest of the NBA and provide our analysis on what happened at the trade deadline for the other teams in the Eastern Conference and everything else. We'll touch on the Cavaliers. We'll touch on the Detroit Pistons when their moves that they made. But first, coming up, what we're going to do is David, you had a conversation with Anthony Chang of the Palm Beach Post, who was there for Pat Riley's press conference and Dwayne Wade's press conference to introduce him to the Heat.
Yeah, it was a great conversation. Not too long, just about 13 minutes or so, but just a really great insight from Anthony, who happened to be in the locker room post-practice talking to players as Adrian Wojnarowski broke the news via Twitter, just the way that everybody else found out about it. That's what Anthony did as well. Got saw the tweets as they were taking place and kind of relayed that to players. So just his take on what it was like to see the players' immediate reaction. We also talked about how this will impact the rest of the locker room, how Wade fits in, what his role could possibly be, not just tonight, but later on in the season as well. And of course, some insight again about how Wade was reacting to the whole thing. It's pretty positive, as you can imagine. And also Pat Riley during his press conference talking about what it was like to bring Dwayne Wade back. So really great conversation and definitely worth a listen.
So let's get to that right now. And then so we're going to run that conversation right here. And then after that, David and I will be back and we'll spin around the league and cover the rest of what happened at the NBA trade deadline.
I'm here with Anthony Chang of the Palm Beach Post. And we're here to talk about the big acquisition from the Miami Heat at the trade deadline. And I'm speaking, of course, of the return of Luke Babbitt after 1 year, half a season in Atlanta. Luke Babbitt's back. And and also, I guess you probably have heard by now, the acquisition of Dwayne Wade coming in a trade from the Cleveland Cavaliers. Anthony, you've been covering the event for the last couple of days, ever since you were notified of it. I think the big reaction, first of all, is you were there in the locker room watching the tweets, just like the rest of us, from ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski talking about the trade as it was playing out, and nobody had any kind of sense beforehand that this was taking place. What was that like for you personally to see this and then to be able to express this to the other players that Dwayne was returning to Miami?
It was something I probably will never forget. I was in the process of interviewing Wayne Ellington by myself about his shoulder and how it's doing after practice, and all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see all these people like almost giddy and like just freaking out. And I'm like, what's going on? I'm kind of distracted talking to Wayne. I have to actually, I think, apologize to Wayne because I think I was looking away from him as he was talking, trying to figure out what was going on. And I finally, you know, finished that interview and look at my phone and I see that the Heat traded for Dwayne Wade. I almost thought it was a fake account. And I immediately run to players that, you know, we're all trying to get players to ask them, you know, their reaction. Hassan didn't believe it. Hassan was surprised as everybody else that learned the news. He thought we were joking. He said, "Are you joking or are you for real?" And when we told him it was for real, he like just all smiles, go on the same thing. Just everybody was, I don't think anybody saw this coming other than the Heat front office. I don't think any of the players had any inkling. And when they found out, they were so happy. So it was a pretty cool experience.
Yeah, it sounds it. I mean, I saw some of the video as well. I guess you and your other beat reporters were you know, filming as you were breaking this kind of information. And it was just kind of great to see it all play out in real time like that. So that's exciting. I'm kind of curious, and you being there in the locker room, obviously a number of guys on the team played with Wade when he was here a couple of seasons ago, but then of course there are others, guys like Babbitt, James Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, and others, Allington, who never really got a chance to play with Wade. Do you sense that there might be an issue there as far as like eating away into minutes or anything like that?
I don't think so. I don't think right now. I think everyone's just so happy that he's here, and it's the emotional high of it all. But I do think it's going to be interesting to see how Eric Spoelstra is going to figure out this rotation, you know, especially when a guy like, Rodney Magruder returns, and then you have Wayne Ellington back healthy and Kelly Olynyk, you know, when he returns from his shoulder injury. There's a lot of guys, and it makes you wonder, like, he can't play everybody. So it makes you wonder if a guy like Justice could be left out, or if a guy like, you know, James Johnson, maybe his minutes go down. It's really going to be interesting to see how Spoelstra works it. You know that he's not afraid of experimenting. You know, Hassan hasn't played a bunch of fourth quarters already this season. And now you have Luke Babbitt, too, in the mix, which, you know, when Olynyk comes back, Babbitt's playing time probably won't be as much. But still, you saw last year he's valuable as a spacer on the floor, especially at the forward position. So, you know, Spoelstra has a lot of options, which is a good, but also at the same time, it means that some guys are going to be left out of the rotation. And I honestly can't tell you who it's going to be, because I don't even think Spoelstra knows who it's going to be at this point. So that's going to be something to watch.
Yeah. It sounds like an interesting, a good problem to have, I guess, having lots of players on there that can contribute and chip in different ways. So it should work out. And I think a lot of Heat fans trust that Spoelstra will be able to figure it out, and that from everything we've heard from Dwayne, and obviously he had his press conference earlier Friday afternoon, he talked about his role. He seems like he's open to any option. I personally think he'll start tonight against Milwaukee, if nothing else, just for the excitement and the buzz there.
Not starting.
He's not starting. Definitely not.
I thought he was going to start as well, and Spoelstra said today that Dwayne Wade will not start tonight, which surprised me as much as surprised you. So he'll be coming off the bench.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, he makes sense coming in a reserve role, but at the same time, just for the sheer excitement of his introduction, I thought it was worth it for one night to start. But I guess they couldn't take any chances against a playoff contender in Milwaukee. So what was Wade's reaction as far as in today's press conference? We've seen videos of him. Obviously, he seems very giddy and ecstatic, but is he accepting of his role, and does he understand what it was going to be asked of him?
You know, it's funny because, you know, just a year and a half ago, Wade left kind of feeling betrayed and unappreciated, and not, you know, all the talk was that he wasn't willing to come off the bench and have a diminished role, you know, and he were paying him $20 million, you know, offer him a $20 million a year contract. But, you know, a year and a half later, he's getting the veteran's minimum, and he sounds A-okay with coming off the bench, whatever role is needed. He says he just wants to win. And he feels he's just grateful that he brought him back. You could tell that he's just happy to be back.
Yeah.
He's been wanting to be back in Miami. He put out a video last night saying how appreciative he is of the organization for trading for him. And it's just a total flip, you know, from a year and a half ago. It's pretty amazing how quickly things can change. And, you know, the feeling I get from Wade is I think the last 2 years have kind of humbled him.
Right.
And he's kind of realized, you know, I can't be that guy anymore. I'm better in a smaller role, maybe 20, 25 minutes a game. Whether it's coming off the bench or starting, he's better in that small window there of playing time, just because it lets him maximize his energy and his effort, you know, on both sides of the court. But with that being said, I think when everything settles down and they're able to work Wade back in 100%, I actually think he's going to start. I mean, I don't see anybody else starting a shooting guard. Tyler's not been good in the starting lineup. Wayne really hasn't started. Spoelstra likes him off the bench. Dion's hurt, obviously. I guess you can say Rodney could start, but I still think, you know, when things settle down and Dwayne gets accustomed to the way he do things again, I think he's going to be the starting shooting guard.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think Tyler comes off the bench and he's more effective in that role. And Rodney, it's going to take some time to integrate him back into the offense. And, you know, that was always a sticking point with him anyway. So to just insert him back into the fire like that, I don't think works best for him. So it's, a guy like Wade, who's seen as much as he has, is probably more capable of handling it. And I got to say, you know, I was in Orlando a couple of days ago when the Cavaliers were in town, and that was as toxic an environment as I've ever seen. That just the mood around that team was so bad. It was an early morning shoot around, and everybody there was so miserable. And Dwayne wasn't even there, but just that sense from everybody else on the team that obviously they had, you know, the drama has been much publicized, but it was so palpable to feel that, and you know, for Wade to kind of escape that, I'm sure it must have been a relief, even if he wasn't, you know, legitimately a title contender or playing for a title contender at that point. He probably appreciates the role that he's going to play in Miami more than being a backup on a bad Cavaliers team that probably doesn't have a realistic chance at a title anyway. But I want to jump also into Pat Riley. Obviously, he spoke to media. Was that yesterday? It was yesterday when he spoke to media, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he talked about, you know, the funeral for Henry Thomas being a big stepping stone, you know, just kind of to strengthen that relationship that had disintegrated over the last couple seasons. And that was obviously the first step. But, you know, he didn't really talk about, at least I don't think he did, like how long this had been in the works. He kind of hinted at that this was a name that had been tossed around there, but he didn't give any kind of insider information as far as when this call actually took place and when it was finalized, did he?
No, he did not. All he said was that it was something that happened pretty quickly. It's not something they had really even discussed maybe before a couple of days ago. I think this happened pretty quickly. The Cavaliers were trying to see what they were going to do. And when Cleveland decided that they were going to trade for all those guys, they kind of realized that Dwayne wasn't going to have the playing time that he once had. And they kind of approached him and said, look, you're not going to play probably much with these new additions, and you know, we'll trade you if you want. And Dwayne obviously approved of it. They did well, and you know, you got to give Cleveland credit. They didn't have to trade him to Miami, and you know they did, and they did right. They wanted to do right by him. They did, and you know, I think that's kind of how it all transpired. Even Udonis said he had been talking to Dwayne for the past few days, past few weeks, just about different things. They reuniting with the Heat next season because they had seen each other at the funeral in Chicago for Henry Thomas. And he didn't see this coming either. He didn't think it was going to happen this soon. And when he found out about it, he said it was the most shocking thing he's experienced in a Heat uniform. And when you think about all the shocking stuff that's happened, whether it's the Big Three or LeBron leaving or, you know, getting Shaq, it's saying a lot that this is the most shocking thing. So I really think this kind of came out of left field for everybody. And they just pounced on it, and it happened pretty quickly.
Now, one last question before I let you go, because I know you're getting ready to go to the Bucks game, but you don't get the sense that this is just a marketing move, right? A little chance of building some free publicity and goodwill there. Like, he can actually contribute to this team. So there might be some of those PR elements, but I think more than anything, it's just a chance to actually get a decent player that can still contribute at this point, isn't it?
Definitely. I think it works both. I mean, we have to remember, look, obviously the Heat want to win championships and they want to win games, but this is a business and they're in it for the money. You know, they want to make money, and Dwayne accomplishes that. I mean, that other than getting LeBron James or some type of superstar like Kevin Durant, this is probably the best marketing / PR move they could have made.
Right.
And they're going to win with that alone. But I really do think he also can help this team. There's a spot for him. I mean, this team has played the most, or if not one of the most, clutch games in the NBA. They're always in close games at the end. And they really, you know, since Deion went out, they really don't have that go-to guy who can create his own shot. It's more of a by committee thing. I think, you know, even at 36 years old, Dwayne Wade gives them that. He's been in those situations. He's still a crafty player who can get his own shot. He knows how to make the right play, whether it's a shot or passing it, when he's penetrating to the basket. He gives them that, and that is something they need. And he's going to help the offense. He's probably right now, I mean, might be saying something about the Heat, but he might be one of your top scorers on the roster right now, just because, this team is one of the worst offenses in the NBA. Last I looked, they were 26 out of 30 in offensive rating.
Yeah.
It's not a good offensive team. And having Dwayne Wade, you know, gives them another offensive option to put the ball in his hands and create and manufacture points. And so I think there is a role for him. I think he is going to help his team. Is he going to average 30 points a game and be 2006 Dwayne Wade? No,
right.
Obviously not. But he can be that, you know, Manu Ginobili role type player where some nights he might be able to give you 20, other nights he might give you 7, you know, but he's going to be a useful asset for this team down the stretch.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, his playmaking ability always been a little understated. I think a lot of people don't really talk about that, just focusing on his scoring, but he's going to be great at creating opportunities for others. And he certainly has held that role for years in the past. So I think he's going to be a great fit. I'm jealous, man. I wish I was going to be there at the American Arena. It's going to be a really electric environment, and hopefully he'll come on board sometime later in the season and tell us all about it. But for now, thanks so much for taking the time. That's Anthony Chang of the Palm Beach Post. You can follow him and his work on Twitter, and always read all about his great coverage of the Miami Heat this season. Thank you, Anthony.
Thanks. Enjoy the game.
Take care.
All right, we are back with our analysis of the rest of what happened at the NBA trade deadline. We're going to play Big Deal or Nah again coming up later on to kind of cover some of those the lesser moves that happened at the deadline. But let's start with the big move here, and that was the Cleveland Cavaliers basically blowing up their team. They out goes Iman Shumpert, Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, Channing Frye. They traded away their own 2018 first round draft pick. They traded out some cash, and in to Cleveland comes George Hill, Rodney Hood, and Jordan Clarkson, Larry Nance Jr. So, David, I know that there's a lot of opinions out there about whether or not the Cavaliers are better or not. I think that they are much better than what they were before. What do you think?
I agree. Although, obviously, like many of the league people watching around the league, I think we have to kind of wait to see how everybody fits in. And that's going to be a huge concern. You wrote a fantastic piece last season, primarily focused on Kyle Korver, but kind of applying it in general sense, like what it was like to kind of fit into a team like the Cavaliers, to kind of playing alongside established players, in, you know, in that case, like Kyrie Irving. But now that even Irving's not there, a guy like LeBron James, who dominates so much of the offense, it's a challenge. It's not as easy as you anticipate. You know, just being able to figure out your role doesn't happen. There's a certain way of doing things. It takes time. So the return on this kind of a big move probably won't be an immediate one, but in the long term, even in the short long term, as far as the rest of the season is concerned, I happen to agree that Cleveland got better. They got longer. They got better as far as their shooting is concerned. Rodney Hood and George Hill in particular are good defenders that can guard a number of wing players. Larry Nance is an active body who dives to the rim, so he can provide some quality minutes there. Jordan Clarkson will probably come off the bench, but he's a guy who can create his own shot as well as shoot somewhat from the perimeter. Not a particularly great shooter, but a guy who'll probably do better in catch and shoot situations playing alongside a guy like LeBron James. So even without Kevin Love, who's still out for a couple more weeks with his broken hand, I think Cleveland is in a better place. And not just, again, for this season, but beyond this. I mean, they kept the Brooklyn pick, which was the big acquisition in the Kyrie Irving trade. And on top of that, they've got a couple of these guys in the books for a couple more years. So in the eventuality that LeBron James leaves, they still got Kevin Love there. They still got George Hill. They've got a couple other players. They'll continue to be a solid, if not a contending team for years to come.
So there's two things that we sort of need to talk about here. The mechanics, like you're talking about here, but also the personalities that were involved in here. It's not a coincidence that you look at the players Cleveland shipped out, and they were all sort of the guys that were creating the unrest in the locker room, minus LeBron. And we can debate how much fault he's at, and I don't really care to do it. But Isaiah Thomas, who is obviously and openly unhappy. Jay Crowder, obviously and openly unhappy.
Was Crowder unhappy?
Yeah, from all the reports that we're hearing, it's just like he just wasn't touching the ball enough, man. Like he wasn't getting the ball nearly enough, and he was playing out of position. And he wasn't.
Yeah, I think there was expectations there, and I know Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs. Yeah, he talked a little bit about Channing Crowder. I mean, I'm sorry, about Jay Crowder. Kind of a
Channing Crowder.
Yeah, sorry.
Linebacker for the Dolphins.
Yeah, I kind of.
Both have dreadlocks. Never made that. I think with Jay, you could see on the court, like he just wasn't engaged defensively. Like so you get rid of him. Channing Frye wasn't. He was, if anything, he was the opposite of a locker room problem. He was probably, from everything that we're hearing and these reports and reading in these reports, he's been, and yeah, you and I have both talked to him. He's awesome. And he apparently was keeping that together, but his expiring contract was too valuable as a piece. And then Iman Shumpert just hasn't been healthy all year and wasn't necessarily a contributor last season when he was healthy. So, look, you get rid of those, and then you get rid of Dwayne Wade, right? And obviously Dwayne Wade is now with Miami. But, you know, that buddy-buddy thing with him and LeBron probably wasn't going over too well in that locker room. And then having this youth movement that's going to overtake the Cavaliers now here a little bit, he's going to have less minutes. So you don't want that to become an issue later on. And so he has to be traded, and they obliged. And now he's in Miami. We've talked about that a lot already. And we'll continue to talk about that as the season goes on. But for, you know, I wrote about this for the Step Back this morning about all the little machinations of what this means for Cleveland. And I love this trade for the Cavaliers. Like I got on Twitter and I made fun of the Lakers trade, which was the first one to kind of drop, right? Because they got rid of a first round pick in order and Isaiah Thomas, which was fine. But they got rid of a first round pick to take Jordan Clarkson off of Los Angeles's hands and that contract, right? And I like Clarkson as a player, but he's overpaid. So yes. I thought they overpaid a little bit for Clarkson and Nance. I love Nance. I love that fit for the Cavaliers. But I thought they overpaid a little bit by including that first round pick. But it I guess that's what they had to do, because then they basically traded a bunch of expiring contracts and cash considerations for George Hill and Rodney Hood, right?
To unload Thomas, who was definitely not just a really bad defensive player, but also not really dealing very well with the kind of pressure that was put on him. You know, he was still not at 100% after the hip injury. A lot of expectations were placed on his tiny shoulders, and he wasn't living up to those expectations. And, he unfortunately, I don't know that he necessarily has an attitude problem. I won't go that far. But he wasn't meshing well in that locker room, and that was clearly a problem. So to unload Isaiah Thomas makes it a pretty good deal. And there's also the eventuality. There's also a possibility that Clarkson will start playing at a higher level alongside a guy like LeBron. I mean, being in Los Angeles with the Lakers over the last couple of seasons, kind of playing a distant fourth and fifth fiddle to Kobe Bryant has got to be a difficult thing to deal with. And I think playing alongside now with higher expectations will probably bring out the best in some of these players. So there's a possibility that he'll be a more well-rounded player than he ever was with the Lakers.
I think they're going to be immediately better. I think the Cavaliers will be immediately better just because – you're getting rid of that negativity. Like, it's gone. Like, everybody that was negative besides LeBron is basically gone now. And especially, I think a lot of people are making fun of them potentially adding Kendrick Perkins.
Yeah.
But they need a guy like that in that locker room, especially now that Channing Frye is not there. I think he just sits on the bench and he's like the Udonis Haslam of that locker room, right? You just need a guy in there to just sort of keep the peace. And I think Perkins could do that. I think just the positive attitude that should sort of flood into that locker room now should immediately help. And then just from a roster standpoint, like, this team wasn't good. I think it's funny. A lot of people say, oh, well, they traded Kyrie and this team isn't going to be, this team isn't as good because they traded away Kyrie for a broken Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder, who hasn't been good in 2 years. And we just haven't admitted it. Would they have been much better, though? Like, I don't know how much better they would have been even with Kyrie Irving, because they still didn't do anything in free agency to contend with the Warriors. And they got basically swept by the Warriors in the finals last year. It was a gentlemanly sweep. That was it. And it was like, I don't know how much better they would have been. But now I like this construction. Look, you've got George Hill, who's a capable 3-point shooter. He was a lousy defender in Sacramento, but when I think he'll be more motivated and engaged in Cleveland. You've got Rodney Hood, who could do some stuff out on the perimeter. You know, he can get hot and shoot for you. I mean, he's by no means a perfect player, and he's very inconsistent. But when he's got it going, he was asked.
I was there in Orlando when Utah came in, and mm-hmm. Rodney Hood had his best game probably of his career, scoring something like 30 points in the third quarter. He was ridiculous, and he has that kind of potential where he can go and score. I'm kind of low on Rodney Hood, to be honest with you, just because of the inconsistencies and the injuries. I don't have a problem with him as a person or as a player, but I think he's just got some issues there that need to be worked through. And I don't know that the kind of pressure that they're going to place on him again in Cleveland will work in his benefit, but his ceiling is considerably higher than the players they traded away. So
it'll probably be less pressure than he had in Utah, though, because he was supposed to be sort of the guy that replaced Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, no, I don't know about that. Again, replacing Gordon Hayward on a Utah team happy to make the playoffs now. That's not pressure compared to playing alongside LeBron James, particularly when they're trying to salvage this season. Like I tweeted about it yesterday. It's so weird that this team is rebuilding and contending at the same time, and this trade really changes how everything is done now. But at the same time, they still see themselves as a playoff contender. So they're not going to be able to take their foot off the gas. They're just going to have to keep moving. And I that piece you wrote really opened my eyes a lot about what it's like to playing alongside LeBron James and on that Cavaliers team. It's not an easy thing. And with Love out, that changes things. You know, once he comes back, then everybody kind of fits into better established roles and they'll understand what their place is in the hierarchy of that team. But I think You're saying that they're going to be immediately better. I'm worried about what they're going to be like immediately afterwards because, yeah, they're going to be there's going to be enthusiasm and optimism there that wasn't there 2 days ago. But at the same time, the mesh on the court isn't going to be apparent for a few weeks.
I think there's going to be some kinks to work out. And, you know, we talk about the players a lot, but Ty Lue's got quite a job in front of him, and he's not a good coach. He's not a good coach. So I don't know if I don't know how he's going to do. It's going to be him and LeBron going to have to mind meld and try to figure this thing out. The good news, though, is that, you know, this isn't trying to incorporate Isaiah Thomas or Derrick Rose or Dwayne Wade even. This isn't trying to incorporate a new superstar. Like, let's say they would have traded for Kemba Walker. You've got to get him into the flow of an offense from being the, you know, the only guy who could do anything in Charlotte to being a second banana next to LeBron. This is not that, right? And so you're not going to have those normal things where you have to try to figure out those egos. I actually think that LeBron, and I wrote about this today, his usage rating is going to have to skyrocket to a point of historic proportions because he is now – he's always been the de facto point guard, but there is no Kyrie Irving now to just sort of break down defenses and give him a break. And even to a certain respect, Derrick Rose and Dwayne Wade and Isaiah Thomas were able to do that. I guess that was theoretically what Isaiah Thomas was able to do when he was healthy. There is nobody remotely like that. Jordan Clarkson could do it off the bench, but he should not get that many minutes next to LeBron.
George Hill isn't going to do that either. So.
George Hill is definitely not going to do that. And George Hill is, to me, like this. You look at this Cavaliers team that they just assembled. That really, to me, feels like last year's Houston Rockets, the one before Chris Paul got there. And that look, you got George Hill playing the Patrick Beverley role. Is he the point guard? I guess, like technically, it says point guard by his name, but he's just out there to defend other point guards and hit open threes. And that's what George Hill's going to do. Hopefully for them, he can do it, and that's the idea there. But for LeBron, I think that's why it's going to work out well because LeBron's already used to having the ball in his hands and now he's just kicking out the different shooters. To me, that's what at least, but we'll see. Do you think that this makes them a competitor in the East? I mean, Boston is obviously the top seed right now. Toronto looks great. Does this narrow the gap for Cleveland?
Yeah, I think they get better. If these pieces mesh, I think they're better than they were 2 days ago. And I think I still have them as being the team likely to get out of the Eastern Conference. And I think that's the ultimate question. Will they represent the East in the NBA Finals this year?
I think they do. I'm really high on this trade, man. I really, really like what they did. I'm not retroactively saying this, but I hated the Kyrie Irving trade for them. And a lot of people said, oh no, they got better, blah, blah, blah. Like Jay Crowder's the guy that they needed to defend Kevin Durant. I'm like, Jay Crowder wasn't good defensively last year. There's a reason that Boston was unable to get to the finals last year. They couldn't defend LeBron. This makes sense. I think LeBron is good enough to make it work. And they filled in enough pieces here to let LeBron do what LeBron does best and then take some, like, yes, his usage rating is going to skyrocket now, but now he doesn't have to, they're going to be able to defend backcourt players. They're going to be able to defend on the perimeter. Rodney Hood is theoretically a good defender. You're hoping that maybe between Hood and J.R. Smith, between both of them being inconsistent, maybe they can alternate nights of when one of them is hot and that works out for them. I like this Cleveland team a lot, and I'm still not sure. Look, Boston didn't add anybody at the deadline. Yes, they got Greg Monroe. That can add some bench scoring for them probably, but they didn't get Tyreke Evans. They didn't get Lou Williams, who signed an extension in LA. And I thought they needed that one extra guy, and they didn't get it. So if I had to bet, I still think Cleveland's the safest wager to make it out of the East. But I
agree.
Overall, I'm super stoked for these playoffs because between Cleveland, Toronto, and Boston, any of them can make it, and I wouldn't be surprised by either of them. Let's move on to the Detroit Pistons, another team in the playoff picture here. Obviously, they added Blake Griffin, making the first big move before the deadline, right? And we've seen a few games of Blake and Andre Drummond. They look good, and they also added James Ennis and Jameer Nelson at the deadline. So let's start with that Blake Griffin thing now. Now that we've seen a few games and they look good, what's your overall impression of Blake Griffin next to Andre Drummond in Detroit?
I think it's going to work. I mean, I think, you know, it made a lot of sense just because of his familiarity with DeAndre Jordan. So he's kind of, although Drummond and Jordan are very different players, I think it still makes a lot of sense as far as the understanding of how they fit together on the court. Yeah. And you know, a guy like Blake, he's a lot smarter than I think a lot of people give him credit for. And I think, you know, the high basketball IQ is certainly apparent. I think he knows how to play alongside those units there. And I think they're going to be a good team. Like, I know you were kind of low on Detroit earlier this year. I still see them as making a strong push for the playoffs. They seem like they're likely to get in at this point. Maybe other teams like Indiana or in Philadelphia might drop out, maybe even Miami at this point. But I think Detroit's put themselves in a pretty good place to kind of make a really strong playoff push.
You know, I like the Blake Griffin addition a lot, especially now that Drummond is playing a little more on the perimeter and getting those dribble handoffs involved and stuff. Like a lot of the things that we see from like Kelly Olynyk, for example, or Bam Adebayo for Miami is what they're doing in Detroit with Drummond. And I like Blake Griffin's just a good player, and they got the best player in that trade. My question is, what happens when Blake gets hurt, right? And I think that's what they possibly addressed here at the deadline. They acquire James Ennis, who can kind of play all along the wing. He's a swing man who can kind of do a lot of different things. Nothing great, but does a lot of things well. He's a hustle player, plays hard. He can rebound. He'll hit an open three every once in a while. Cuts to the basket well. Ex-Miami Heat player James Ennis. So I like that addition. And then they added Jameer Nelson, who obviously has history with Stan Van Gundy. And look, Ish Smith has been nice for them in Reggie Jackson's absence. But Ish Smith does strike me as a little bit of like fool's gold, empty calorie situation. Yes, he runs really fast with the ball. Yes, he can get to the rim. And yeah, he went off for a career night against Miami a few nights ago. Yeah. But those games are fewer and further between. He doesn't do necessarily a great job of getting players involved, which Jameer Nelson, if he can do anything anymore, it's just kind of get guys involved and sort of be the general on the floor there for them. So I like having Jameer Nelson there as kind of the thunder and lightning between him and Ish Smith. I like Detroit's moves. I'm still not totally high on them as a team overall. Like, I think they're still a first round exit, but I think they make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the long term ramifications of the Blake Griffin acquisition are still unknown, but hinging on his overall health, which makes things very precarious because he's dealt with a number of injuries. But their ceiling is much higher, I think, despite the getting rid of a guy like Tobias Harris, who had played particularly well this year. And these other minor moves, again, although they're not great in a vacuum, they shore up a weaker roster and they add some punch there. A guy like Ennis can provide some nice scoring off the bench. You know, Jameer can shoot from range and knows how to get other people going, as you said. And you know, that veteran savvy, a guy who's been to the NBA Finals, I think that's a great attitude, a great presence to have. I don't know that anybody else in that roster, I'm trying to think. I mean, Andre Drummond's barely made the playoffs. You know, Reggie Jackson has some experience, but he was a backup in Oklahoma City. I don't know that they have that kind of experience where they really, well, I mean, Stanley Johnson. So there's some playoff experience there, but not enough to kind of say this is what it takes to get to the big dance.
Right. And Jameer Nelson and Stan Van Gundy, those are the guys that have advanced in the playoffs in that space. And Blake
together
Griffin,
with the Orlando Magic.
Yeah. And that's basically it. So I think, yeah, that's a good point. I mean, just having those three important guys. I mean, Jameer Nelson's not a very good player anymore. He's fine. But he's going to play a major role in that locker room, I think. And that's going to be big for them. And then just having Blake and Stan Van Gundy there, I don't know, depends on who they play in that first round. The East is just really interesting right now. I'm really excited for the playoffs in the East because I think a 7 or an 8 seed could beat the 1 or 2 seed easily. Like I think that that is a real possibility this year. If things just break right, you know, like none of these teams scare me. None of these teams are as good as Houston or Golden State, you know. None of these teams are as good as San Antonio when Kawhi gets healthy. Like I think they're all beatable in any sort of series if just certain things break. All right. Big Deal or Nah, our new game. We debuted it last week. We're playing it now again post-trade deadline. We're going to whip around some of these smaller, though maybe important, we'll decide, deals that went down. So let's start with Orlando, who shipped off Elfrid Payton and his hair for a 2018 second round pick from Phoenix. So just ridding themselves of Elfrid Payton and all the hair gel that came with them. What do you think? Big deal or nah?
Ooh, this is tough because the context of Orlando really changes everything, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say big deal, not for Elfrid Payton, not because of the trading of Elfrid Payton. I haven't been a supporter of his for some time now. I saw him up close in Orlando. Great person to talk to, et cetera. But at the same time, not a very particularly good player. And I think it was a good move for them, to be honest with you. He was not part of their long-term plans. He's entering restricted free agency this summer. They weren't going to bring him back. He probably cost too much, even if they did. So at this point to get anything of value from him. Like, a lot of people are trashing the Magic because they, you know, they translated a number 10 overall pick for a early second round draft choice, because that's probably where the Phoenix pick will wind up being, somewhere in the top 35 or so. So I think it's a good move, to be honest with you. I think it's a big deal in the sense that they're at least a little closer to where they want to be, because part of the way you clean house is by, you know, getting rid of the debt, the detritus, you know, of the team. And I think that's part of the thing of clearing the room there, of getting rid of Elfrid Payton, is saying, you know what, he's not a guy that we want to build around, you know, right. Even as a backup or a role player or anything like that, he's not the kind of guy that we want on this team. This current front office didn't acquire him, so they're looking forward, and you know, they get an extra draft pick out of it. So it's a good move. They can always bring a free agent as a point guard, you know, some point later on. So
yeah, they've got DJ Augustine and Sheldon Mack. Yeah, they're at point guard right now. Would not surprise me if a point guard they deemed as valuable popped up on the buyout market, and, you know, they buy out Aaron Aflalo and bring him in, or whatever might happen. But I think that might be an option for them. Elfrid Payton, look, you're right. It sucks that, you know, a guy who was drafted in the lottery just didn't pan out for them. But you know, this front office, like you said, didn't draft him. They weren't necessarily, you know, indebted to him or loyal to him in any way. And he was a free agent after this season, and they weren't going to bring him back. And that was clear. So get a second round pick for him. I mean, people might be thinking, oh, you only got a second round pick for a young guy who still has potential. They didn't have much leverage. It was very known that they weren't, you know, that they weren't going to, they didn't see a Payton as part of their future. And if you're right. Phoenix, you get Elfrid Payton. I kind of like it as a value play for them. Yeah. You get him. He can theoretically defend other guards. I mean, he didn't really do it that well in Orlando, but
he did pretty badly. Actually, he was terrible. He would get hung on screens so often. It was god awful watching him play out there. You know,
he's still young enough that, yeah.
No, yeah, his reputation is being a sterling defender, and he was terrible at it.
Yeah. I think maybe partly because it was so much asked for him. I don't know. Maybe there was so much asked of him on offense, but, like, look, he's not going to have anything asked of him on offense in Phoenix because Devin Booker does everything for them on that end of the floor. So I don't know. Maybe it works. And I get, like, he's young. You know, you might as well buy low on him. And if it all costs is a second round pick, it's not like Elfrid Payton was going to sign in Phoenix. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. If it was his choice and now they control his rookie scale deal. I don't know, maybe it works out. And then if it doesn't, they just let him go. And all they lost was a second round pick. The New York Knicks traded for Emmanuel Mudiay, another point guard who didn't pan out. Big deal or not?
Nah, this is not a big deal. Look, I've always liked Mudiay for some reason. I don't know. I guess I always saw enough flashes there to warrant my interest and kind of keeping me sustained. I might be one of the few people left on, Mudiay Island or whatever it might be. You know, he's got the right size and everything else, I think, but it's not a very good situation for him. Like, he needs a firmer, more disciplined hand to guide him. And I don't think he's going to get that from Jeff Hornacek and the New York Knicks. So, you know, he's going to be backing up Frank Ntilikina, so I don't even know what the point is of getting him on this team. Like, he was already disgruntled in Denver. It was clear he fell out of favor there. He had a problem with media all season long. It's not been a comfortable situation for him, even though he was drafted again in the lottery. And so he was just never going to be able to turn into much in Denver. If he was going to get a fresh start, it needed to be in a place that could actually make the most of his abilities. And I don't think New York is that.
He's got two more years left on his deal. You know, not a great shooter, but shooting 37% on 2.4 threes a game this year. Maybe you play him next to Ntilikina, and now you've got, like, this backcourt that is super long and switchy defensively. I don't mind it. I'm with you on Mudiay Island or whatever, you know, body land structure we want to call it. But it might just be like a paddle boat at this point. But I kind of like it for New York. Look, I agree. He probably needs a better structure for him. But if you're New York, you can't, you know, worry about that necessarily. You just go find a good player on a value when you can. And all they had to do is get rid of Doug McDermott, who actually liked for them. But, you know, apparently everybody likes to trade Doug McDermott. So they moved him to Dallas. Dallas moved Devin Harris to Denver, give them an actual point guard who could do stuff, a veteran presence there, which they needed in that backcourt, and the Knicks get Mudiay and a second round pick. I like it for value play. Look, I mean, Moutier is still young, 2 more years left on his contract, and you control it after that. I like it. And just, you know, theoretically, you got 2 really long guards who could switch everything. It might not be bad for them. You know, you put them with Kristaps Porzingis when he comes back, and that's potentially a long team. That could be pretty good defensively. Our next one, let's go to Chicago. They acquire Willie Reed and Noah Vonleh because they don't have enough centers. Big deal or not?
Nah. You know, Willie Reed, I like it. I like him as a player when he was with Miami. I liked his attitude. I was hoping for the best for him. But obviously, look, the fact that he was traded away from the Clippers to the Detroit Pistons, and they didn't want him. I think it's not a big deal, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm going to say the same thing. I mean, I understand buying low on Noah Vonleh, who, again, another player that I like. I think he's a hardworking rebounder. Fell out of the rotation in Portland because they just have such a dearth of big men there. But overall, it's not going to really move the needle in Chicago's favor. The Bulls are rebuilding, and Noah Vonleh is not going to make them a playoff team. So, look, I get trying to buy low on these guys. That's what rebuilding teams do. Overall, not a big deal. It's not going to really move the needle too much for Chicago. The Toronto Raptors swapping Malachi Richardson for Bruno Caboclo, who, by the way, was drafted 4 years ago. Remember?
Yeah.
That's the guy that was 2 years away from being 2 years away. I think he's still a couple of years away, David. Big deal or not?
Definitely not.
I think this is probably the least biggest deal of the trade deadline.
I mean, listen, I hate getting into it because I think it's really petty, but it was the kind of thing where, like, Shams Sharina, I think, he tweeted this out in context of, like, when Adrian Wojnarowski was sending out his flurry of tweets about all these different major moves taking place at the same time. And it felt so underwhelming as a result. And that's not a knock on Shams, who's great in free agency and over the summer. But at the same time, it was particularly weird seeing this kind of really, really, really minor, insignificant deal on a day where everybody was looking at major moves taking place. So,
yeah, Malachi Richardson fell out of the rotation in Sacramento for reasons I don't understand. I thought he could help that team, but they didn't play him a whole lot, except for spot minutes here and there. Bruno Caboclo, I don't know. I just like the Raptors have enough long, weird, like rangy wings. I don't know where Malachi Richardson fits in. I don't think he gets much playing time. Maybe if somebody gets hurt, that's an insurance policy. And Sacramento's got so many. They traded for Bruno Caboclo and then got rid of what's his face, the big 7'3" white guy that they drafted at
Giorgio Papagiannis.
They just released him and they swore that they liked his potential up and down.
13th pick overall a couple seasons ago, and now he's out of the league.
Just like Jesus.
Okay, this is. Can I make a rant here?
Yeah.
This is why when Heat fans talk about getting lottery picks and why we need to go into the lottery, it's not a guarantee, folks. There's a very, very likely chance that who you wind up selecting in the lottery is either going to be a role player at best or out of the league at some point. You know, Emmanuel Mudiay drafted 6th overall. Papagiannis drafted 13th, Elfrid Payton drafted 10. These guys were traded for nothing and they're not of any significant value. They don't change anything, but yet they were lottery picks. So all this talk about tanking and why we went 30-11, why the Heat went 30-11 last season, it's worth it. And winning is its own reward.
I can't believe you did that. I can't believe we're like near. That was the last trade I wanted to talk about. And you opened up this can of worms about debating, you know, we disagree about this. You know that we disagree about this, and I just – the Heat aren't Sacramento. They draft well.
I got to be me, man.
Historically, they draft much better than Sacramento. I want to look
– Well, that's not saying much. I mean, I think anybody could draft better than Sacramento.
They still were able to get Josh Richardson in the second round. Like, I want more draft picks. I want more draft picks. Now, I also – you got to take chances. You know, for every Elfrid Payton that Orlando drafted, they got Aaron Gordon, and he's awesome. You got to take chances. Look,
yeah, but he's also not a guy that you build around.
The 76ers are set, and they only hit on 50% of their draft picks during the process.
What's set? They're the 8th seed in the Eastern Conference.
They're young, the future. They got it. Not set. I shouldn't say set.
Oh, yeah. The future with a non-shooting point guard and the center on bulky feet and knees. No,
they're looking good. They are looking much better than a lot of teams. I'm just saying.
Okay.
They're the there. And they only hit. The point is, they only have 50% of their picks
in the league right now. They're the 16th best team in the Eastern Conference with a Hall of Fame center who might not be able to play in 3 years. So yeah, that's a great outlook.
Look, I mean, 4 years from now, whatever. Papa Giannis was drafted ahead of Chris LeVert, nice player for Brooklyn right now. DeAndre Bembry, who's doing stuff in Atlanta. Pascal
Siakam. It's good to look retroactively in hindsight and say, oh, yeah, this team drafted well. But you know what's even better? Already acquiring a proven player. And you
like James Johnson at $13 million a year. Deontay Murray was drafted after Papa Giannis. Man, they really screwed. Tyler Ulis. He's a nice player. Malcolm Brogdon, one rookie of the year. Some good, decent players. Not the best draft, but some decent players after Papa Giannis. Nobody knew why the Kings took him in the first place at 13.
That was a bad move. That was a really bad move.
That was weird. Anyway, our disagreement about draft picks notwithstanding, I think we're done here.
I think so too. good trade deadline. Maybe a little, I can't say anticlimactic. Unexpected, I think, is the best way of summing it up.
I thought it was very overall climactic.
Cleveland
blowing it up, and then Dwayne Wade coming to Miami. No, I mean, that's sure. Everything I needed. I mean, right there.
That was a really, well, again, the unexpected. We thought, and we had seen a number of players that we thought would be, look, even, a guy like Tyreek Evans had been discussed ad nauseum for weeks leading up to the trade deadline, wound up staying pat. That's Chris Wallace's problem now. The Grizzlies fan base is not happy about it. But other players along those lines that we expected to be traded weren't moved, even on our own team. Hassan Whiteside, James Johnson, Deion, whoever, even Wayne Ellington, Beef, you know, he's still part of the Heat roster. So, but at the same time,
I want to touch on that really quick, though, before we wrap up here, is that you're right. There's the big names, the DeAndre Jordans, the Kemba Walkers, they didn't move, right? It was a lot of the minor moves, but still sort of surprising. Like, nobody thought Dwayne Wade was leaving Cleveland. They thought, like, there's no way LeBron wants that to happen. Turns out LeBron wanted the best for Dwayne Wade. If there's any good in LeBron James anymore, he still's got love for Dwayne Wade, who knows that he likes to eat salmon. Or vice versa, LeBron knows that Dwayne Wade likes salmon.
Wasn't it Chilean sea bass or something bass, like that?
Like Dwayne Wade doesn't usually eat fish, but he would eat the sea bass. I don't know. something like that.
He was ordering it for him at restaurants.
Yeah, that was
odd. That was odd. He's like, he knew exactly what Dwayne Wade was getting. So that was, that's a very close friendship. I wouldn't do that for my own wife, much less anybody else.
Oh my God. I would never order sea bass for my wife. I don't have a wife. I don't know what I'm saying that.
Well, that's why you wouldn't order it.
That's right. That's exactly why.
You have to have one first.
The order of the process of events that needs to happen.
Yeah.
That's the process. But one thing about Miami is, like, before, you know, I think a lot of Heat fans, look, the Dwayne Wade thing obviously is a really good emotional tug at the heartstring there to sort of maybe mask the fact that they didn't really do anything major to improve the team. I think Dwayne Wade's going to help this team. I mean, if you think about where this team lacked, and we had talked about it all season, they lacked a closer. They lacked a guy who can sort of create shots for himself when just things go to crap, you know, offensively. Dwayne Wade, theoretically, on good nights, can take those 4-minute scoring slumps and cut them in half. You know what I mean? And just make things a little bit better and sort of juice the offense here and there. Sounds like he's going to be coming off the bench, which is a good move, I think. That's the role he needs to play, just because the amount he is going to even play will be inconsistent, so you don't want that in the starting lineup. And as far as, you know, look, the Heat still have that luxury tax issue coming down next year. They still have a math problem that they got to solve. Those things are usually solved over the summer, and I think a lot of people wanted it to get solved because they wanted answers here at the trade deadline. It's just so hard to do that at the deadline. It's so hard to do that when you have a deadline to make it to rebuild in a smart way, or to ship off big salaries in a smart way where you're not necessarily contending, and the Heat aren't contending. And if they were to trade, no trade they were going to make at the deadline, we're going to make them contenders right now this season. So I think there will be a move that's going to happen over the summer where they do ship off a larger contract, whether it's Whiteside, James Johnson, Tyler Johnson, whoever it is, they're going to have to make that move. It just has to happen. But obviously that'll happen in June or July or something like that. And for now, we got Dwayne Wade in South Beach, and we can enjoy that tonight. His first game against Milwaukee, Miami Vice, Dwayne Wade. It's going to be fun.
It should be a great game. Really electric atmosphere there. I'm looking forward to seeing.
All right, we'll be back next week. That's all we have for this week. A lot of trade deadline stuff. If you missed any of it, go back and listen to it. But thank you for listening and for subscribing. You can send mailbag questions for next week and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockdownheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.